You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Damian Davis. He's talking to me from New York. Damian, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Let's begin with what you're working on now. What's as a way of introducing the listeners to your work, what's happening in your studio, or are you preparing for something or in the middle of something?
Right now, it's interesting. I just finished putting on a solo show out in Seattle. So I've got a bunch of static work that's sort of out existing in the world right now, and I'm currently working on a project. It's a collaborative project with the Art and Law Program. It's a program out here in New York. We're sort of organizing this. Not quite sure how to describe it yet, but we're getting together various arts administrators, artists, academics to do an afternoon of conversations about the law and art and the intersections that exist there, and hopefully provide a space to open up conversations that otherwise wouldn't happen in traditional sort of art settings. So yeah, there's like a lot of logistical administrative stuff happening right now because I've just sort of birthed this show that I'm still sorting out in my head.
So you mean the show that just came down?
It's still up. It's going to be up until August 6th. It's out in Seattle at a space called Method Gallery. It's in the sort of historic part of Seattle. Did you want me to talk a little bit about the show? And
yeah, let's talk about the show. Let's talk about, because a solo show is of course, you know, important and a major effort. So yeah, how did you approach that show if there was an approach to that, and what's in it? Let's talk about what's in that show.
Sure. Well, the show is called White Room. And I guess in the most simplistic terms, I can just sort of describe the show as a white room filled with white work in the literal sense. My practice involves primarily working through this ongoing investigation of this idea of blackness and what that means beyond just sort of depictions of the black body. So the way that blackness gets coded and decoded in various cultures throughout the world, and how we as just sort of living, existing people process visual cues and sort of code them or decode or recode them as black. So this show in Seattle is really about sort of investigating the way that blackness can or cannot potentially exist in a traditional gallery space, and just sort of calling into question this idea of the white cube and the white gallery space and whiteness in the gallery space, and the gallery space as a sort of proxy for whiteness, and the ways in which we can begin to kind of unpack that. So
that sounds really interesting, and I'd like to talk about those issues more. But to talk just about what was in the gallery and how the work was built, all the work was white on white?
Yeah. When I was initially asked to do the show in the space, Method Gallery is really interested in pushing forward like process-based installation work, which is something that I had never really done. But after seeing images of the space, the thing that really struck me was the fact that the space has like this obvious sort of rich history. There's this decorative tile floor. It's part of this historic part of town. So I thought it would be interesting to create a show that was literally about sort of covering up the history of that. And I've been following a lot of artists like Dwayne Linkletter or the Occupy Museums movement who have done shows recently that have been about sort of literally cutting into the wall as a critique of the gallery space And what I thought would be interesting would be to sort of do the inverse of that, where I'm doing this performative act of covering up the space. So in the show, what I've done is create this giant CNC routed jigsaw puzzle that covers the entire floor of the gallery, along with other smaller sculptural objects that exist on the walls that sort of force the viewer to have to traverse this strange floor that I've made.
So they have to step on top of the work, or they have to walk in between the work?
They walk on the work. They walk all over me, in a sense.
That's a very interesting kind of sculptural position, right? Do people hesitate to do that? How does the audience react to that? I would think, you know, even though I'm an artist and I'm used to things like that, I would hesitate.
Oh, there's definitely some hesitation involved. And the floor is completely white. It's all MDF painted with white floor paint. So it's essentially strangely kind of bombed the space with this flood of white. The room is extremely bright when you walk in, and the floor is not something that you would necessarily immediately register as an art piece, but when you first walk into the space, there's sort of a moment where you might like maybe put one foot on it and realize, like, okay, there's something going on here, and then you might step back, and then you're encouraged to move into the space. And the floor pieces, I should probably step back and explain a little bit about my practice. When I talk about the ways in which blackness gets coded and decoded, it's accomplished primarily through this loosely fixed lexicon of shapes that I've been developing for myself. So ideas and concepts around what I'm trying to sort of work through get distilled to these base iconic forms, and then I use those to create these sort of narrative works. So several of the puzzle pieces on the floor are iterations of these shapes. So as you're moving through the space, you're sort of recognizing, you know, oh, this is like a strange torso that kind of has a sort of fertility goddess quality to it, or it's a strange bone or a cowrie shell, things like that.
And they fit together, you said, as in a jigsaw puzzle. They're CNC routed, so they're cut out, I would imagine, almost like puzzle shapes, and they literally are interlocking?
Oh, yes. It all fits together. It was not fun to assemble, but it was still a rewarding process. I'm still sort of sorting out my feelings about the space, and well, not the space, but just rather the piece. And I'm going to be heading back to Seattle soon, so I'm looking forward to hearing some of the feedback.
And so let's talk a little bit about, you know, that's your kind of, as you're saying, your personal language, your iconography, these shapes that have occurred in other works or a method of working. In terms of blackness and whiteness, you know, we're hearing even more about that now, you know. Terms of white supremacy is heard more, even in terms of visual languages. I know that one time I wrote a newsletter covering some of these interviews, and I was kind of trying to take a more poetic tone and talking about how whiteness is associated with spirituality and blackness associated with, you know, something darker or sinister. And immediately got feedback that, you know, that's a classic way of looking at black as negative and white as positive. And I mean, in terms of like white being something kind of lofty and spiritual and black being something as sort of dark and bad or evil. And the people that wrote to me, I think, were largely black and kind of responding to that. And it struck me that, gosh, you know, yeah, I'm perpetuating this kind of language about it. But perhaps you're not approaching it that same way. But I'd like to think about how you are approaching that, and in terms of the racial dialogue that's happening now with everything from what happened at the Whitney, the Hannah Black letter, to Black Lives Matter, and this renewed dialogue, it seems, over skin color, you know. Are your works are in dialogue with that, essentially, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think it all goes back to language and the sort of stickiness of that. There's no way especially when we talk about art, to sort of divorce the complexities of just trying to take something that you see and put it into words. And especially when it comes to color, you know, black, white, red, yellow, whatever, they do get coded in these ways that can be problematic, that are often problematic. And the show in Seattle is really about sort of trying to just exist in that weird, sticky space where there's no way for you to talk about what's going on in the space without becoming sort of hyper aware of how problematic the way you're speaking about it is. So when you talk, when there's one of the shapes is literally like an anus, for example, or a power button. So then I have to describe the thing as this white power button. And it's just sort of forcing you linguistically to have to fall into these sort of trapdoors, in a sense. Mm. And my feeling is, until you can force someone to have an honest, sincere conversation about these things, there's no way to really move forward. And it is something that I find really problematic right now. Everyone's getting very caught up in the stickiness of the words and how problematic they are. But it's a harder thing to really sort of tease out is the intention or the sincerity or the honestness behind what somebody's trying to convey through words. Because, you know, the second you start opening your mouth, it's messy. And if there's a way to acknowledge that, then you can begin to just sort of be okay with that.
It's interesting.
It
does. It's complex, right? It's hard to get into. I mean, what makes it even more complicated to me is also who is the artist, right? Is the artist black? Is the artist white? Who's making work that's largely black or white or about color? That also is part of the dialogue, isn't it? I mean, part of the shooting in Minneapolis of, as I've been reading about a black woman, is the questions we're asking is why, not this was a racist shooting because the officer was black. So, you know, it seems that depending on the color of the officer, depending on the color of the artist, the work is also interpreted differently, isn't it? Or the artist's intention is interpreted differently.
Yeah, well, there's a few things to unpack when you talk about those things. You know, when you're talking about black police officers, for example, there's someone's identity as a black person, but then there's also their identity as a police officer. So their existence in blue might change their readings or their experience in the moment as someone who's black. And that's one of the things that I'm really interested in sort of figuring out, especially when you talk about ideas of colorism and things like that. Like, there are always instances where black people are not able to recognize their own blackness when dealing with other black people. And I don't necessarily want to make this conversation about that, but I do. I think in those situations when you're talking about black police officers and the way that they may or may not be able to inflict trauma on other black bodies, you're talking about a larger, more meta conversation about the ways in which we sort of train people of all colors to code and decode things that are black, things that are dark, and equate them with things that are evil and bad. And until we can figure out a way to make people more aware that that's something they're doing on a subconscious level through the depiction of everything that we see in media and literature, things like that, that's the only way you can begin to sort of unpack what's happening in those specific kinds of situations. In terms of ideas of authorship with artistic work, it's something that I definitely take advantage of. I know that there's things artistically that I can get away with based on my identity as a black gay man, and I know that there's things that straight white women can't get away with. Whether or not that's based on lived experiences and an ability to relay those in a sincere way, I'm not sure. But what I'm interested in with the work that I do is forcing these conversations where you have to acknowledge my existence as an intersection of these various labels that are in the world.
Well, it's so interesting because art is, of course, about, or very often about form and light and color. And as you're talking about this, it also extends all of those ideas into, in one way, there is that meta conversation, as you were talking about, with police and how they're trained and culturally programmed. And so it gets quite complicated because we're all approaching then work, artwork that's about color and form, but in a way that also has social implications with a whole host of complex influences in a sense. I mean, I don't want to keep drawing this comparison, but not unlike police officers, who it's not simply that they're white or black. It's also, as you're saying, how they're trained, and we're all trained also in visual literacy to some degree, aren't we?
No, totally. I mean, for me, the issue with, because the work I make, I consider the work very aesthetic. I mean, people have described the work as decorative. I'm interested in form and line and shapes, but I also am interested in those things knowing that they don't exist in a vacuum. And I'm also interested in figuring out ways to make work that prove to people that those things don't exist in a vacuum. And that's a big part of where this show in Seattle is kind of coming from. It's sort of questioning this idea of the gallery space as neutral. So things about the gallery space that are quote-unquote idealized for exhibiting work, like, why do we really think that? Like, why are white walls the ideal for showing work? Why is it not a conversation about the actual work first, and then making a determination about what's going to strengthen elements of the work for a potential viewer? You know, how can we have conversations about the types of viewers that may potentially interact with this piece instead of assuming that the viewer will automatically or traditionally be, white, heterosexual, male, cis, whatever. Because for me, the work that I'm making is coming from my lived experiences, and I'm not interested in creating work that is pandering towards a traditional reading of art. I understand that work will be traditionally read through a certain type of lens, and you know, we can have a conversation about what that lens is and what that lens represents. But for me, it's about creating work that sort of forces an acknowledgement that my lived experiences are informing my understanding of these really base shapes and the relationships between those. And it's messed up, for lack of a better
right
phrase.
In that show, are the walls also white and the floor? What are the colors of the room itself?
The walls are white. All the floor pieces are white. There's several pieces on the walls. Right now I've been making a lot of work with laser cut plexiglass that's held together with traditional hardware, nuts and bolts, things like that. All the work that I make begins on the computer. I'm really interested in lines and vectors and digital forms of output. So right now I'm interested in shooting lasers at things and putting them together with hardware and feeling manly, but then making work that's really sort of delicate and intimate. And so there's mm-hmm. several small wall-based plexiglass sculptures that are white, just made with white or clear plexiglass, that they're more aesthetic and they're more about sort of decorative art objects, and in ways that might be too complicated to describe here, they're inspired by this puzzle that exists on the floor, and they also serve this other function where they essentially force the viewer to have to traverse this thing that exists on the floor of the gallery in order to see these other more traditional art objects, quote unquote.
Right. It's very interesting. You know, it's when you mentioned a little bit about your work before, seeming can seem almost decorative to some, it reminded me of Alan Gallagher's work or that notion, and who's also been interviewed for this series quite a while ago. But the idea in her work, which looks almost decorative and kind of austere, like Agnes Martin from a distance, or some of her work does. And then up close, there's all this language and this kind of iconography about being black, and in her case, being biracial, and the as I learned from her and reading more about her and knowing her, because I've actually known her for quite a few years, all the complexities that comes with, being too white for the black kids and too black for the white kids, and all these kind of things that are going on. But I'm mentioning her because all of those things would not be readily apparent in her work. The viewer has the option of looking at her work and enjoying it on some kind of formal or decorative level, but up close and with a little more research into the artist, we get into a dialogue that's much more complex and much more difficult to kind of unpack. Aren't some of those aspects happening with your work? These two distances and also the unpacking of your intentions and also who you are as an artist, as a man, as a gay man. All of these things suddenly come into play when we know more about you and how that relates to the work. Is that part of it, or just correct me if I'm wrong?
Oh, I definitely think so. You know, she's been a huge influence on my work. And for me, it's, I have to, when I talk about the work that I make, I have to acknowledge that I'm sort of benefiting from the work of many brilliant artists that have come before me that have been able to sort of force this conversation and allow a space to open up where I can still talk about these issues but also still make work that's formal and aesthetic and rigorous in that sense. So it's always my hope that the work is going to operate in as many different ways for as many different people as possible. That's something that's always been really important to me. I especially, you know, with this show that's talking about the gallery space and who has access and who feels welcome and things like that, I've always been more interested in making work that people who don't know anything about art or feel like the art world isn't for them or feel like the art world doesn't want them, making work that they can access in one way or another. And then at least create a space to open up that conversation. Because my feeling is right now where we've, as a society, have just reached a point where we can't talk to each other about anything. And if there's a refusal to even have the conversation, no matter how difficult it's going to be, then things just begin to get unmanageable. And then that honestly feels like where we're at right now. Everything is unmanageable. No one can manage anything, you know.
By not manage anything, you mean the conversations become unmanageable about some of these issues because everyone's, I mean, did you mean it in terms of like this kind of the way Facebook, you're either for or against, and there's actually not really a dialogue. There's just, camaraderie
I guess for me, it's a problem. The Facebook thing, just in terms of, it's so, I always joke about this with my friend. It's like, you know, you send a text message and it's all up to interpretation. I can assume that you're being as friendly or as angry with me as I decide you are in the given moment. So because people aren't talking to each other face-to-face and having to sort of work those muscles or figure out how to do that anymore, it's all breaking down. The conversation is breaking down because people don't know how to have conversations with other people anymore. There's this sort of this realization. Right? If anything, we're taught to realize quickly and immediately if a conversation is going to be pleasurable or easy, and then if it's not, the strategy is then to try and shut that conversation down as quickly as possible. I want to create as many opportunities as possible for the conversation to open up, and that's a big part of where this lexicon comes from, because it's not something that you're immediately going to understand. You think that you understand it, and it's only through conversation with other people, conversation with me, conversation with yourself,